All right, well, welcome everybody. It's nice to see a full class. Wasn't sure who all to expect, so it's fun to finally put faces to who I've been preparing for the last several weeks. I never did a PowerPoint presentation before in my life, so it was a learning curve. I was asking my teenage son to help me. How do I do this? How do I put it together? So I hope it works. We're praying it works. If it shuts off on me, you'll have to bear with me. As y'all saw in the paper, my name's Regina. I am married to Darwin Rosenberry. We have 6 children. We live in Greencastle, Pennsylvania, which is about 5 minutes from Maryland's state line. I know the war has long been over, but I'm still glad to say I'm a Pennsylvania girl. We have a 25-acre farmette. We have some cows, calves, chickens, pigeons, dogs, cats, 2,000 stink bugs, and deer. You name it, they're usually there. I'm a wife and mom, first of all. And after that, on any given day, I can be a variety of things. And sometimes I enjoy pretending I'm a photographer. I enjoy getting out my camera, catching moments where I can. I got my first camera back, probably about 20 years ago, and I fell in love with it. And when you have children, you have a lot of interesting moments to capture and to try for photos. I look back at some of my first attempts, and I sort of cringe when I see the pictures. But as in all things, you have to start somewhere. And you got to learn as years go by. You have to have trial and error before you'll find success. So this class is for normal, non-professional people who just love the thrill of capturing and finding that perfect photo. How many of you feel like you're beginners, starters, just to get an idea a little bit of, okay. And how many of you feel like you're more advanced, getting professional up there? Okay, a few hands, and I'm not going to ask who's professional because I don't want to know. That'll intimidate me. Okay, it gives me a little idea of where we're at. Showing my age here, but for a lot of the first beginning, when I took pictures or used film. How many of you know what film is? Okay, you're showing your age too. But when I did weddings, I would buy 10, 20 canisters of film, and you'd have to put it in your camera and hold it in and make the little noise while it wound up, and then you're ready to take your picture. And then as I viewed the pictures, you had to wait several weeks for them to print. You finally got them back. It's a face I didn't expect to see. And then you finally get the pictures back, and you think, oh, there was a car in the background. Why didn't I see that car? And I see a leaf on the sidewalk that just ruins that perfect photo. You wish you could pick it up, but you can't. Years ago, what you got is what you got. You had one chance to get it perfect. But now we come to the modern age of time, and you now have all kinds of options available. And those of you who have never shot with film don't realize how good you have it. To have a picture, see it as soon as you take the picture. See anything you don't like, you have time to edit and change it and crop it and turn it into a picture that wasn't hardly even what you started out with. Cut and paste people into the picture if you weren't even there. You can swap smells. You can put hair on your bald-headed husband if you want. There's all kinds of things you can do. Then when it comes to the basic rules of photography, things haven't really changed. And what makes a compelling picture 10 years ago still is what makes a great picture today. You can add all of the filters and edits that you want on a picture, but if it's not composed correctly or if it's poorly composed, it won't help no matter how much editing that you do to it, up to a point, I should say. Every photographer sees the world through a different lens, pun intended, and eventually your eye will notice how the light wraps around an object or the way a pleasing composition just falls into place and you just instantly see that as a perfect picture. And you notice these things as you go throughout your day or as you travel along the road. What scenes catches your eye is what helps to create your own personal style. What scene captures my eye may not capture yours. And likely your theme or feel of what you take will be different because each photographer sort of develops their own style. If I had to label my photos, I'd probably say country life. That's a lot of what my photos would represent and what it seems to capture my attention. The majority of photos you take, and even professionals take, will likely never be a perfect used photo. So don't get the idea that every picture you take, you can eventually, especially for professionals, is a perfect photo. Out of all the pictures you take, you may only use one or two out of 80 that actually turned out to be a good picture. So today's workshop, I'm talking mostly about the everyday snapshots that we take. Using a very basic, ordinary camera. You don't have to have an $8,000 camera in order to get a perfect photo. Sometimes cell phones are so good nowadays, they can take amazing pictures. And I'm also not talking about the latest, newest fads that you see for photos on Pinterest or Instagram, but we're just talking about normal photos you're going to see and take when you're in the house, going on a trip, see your children playing in the backyard, you're driving along the road, and you say, stop, there's a picture. So how can we make these pictures more interesting? How can we make them more compelling? How's a few ways we can tweak them to make them a good photo? How can we use these pictures to capture a scene and to tell a story that we saw and that we want to tell? Or maybe it's a special mood or feeling of the moment and you want to try to capture that mood and feeling. I gave you all some handouts. I had to email it to my husband's computer to print it out, and it looked like the format changed a little on me, so bear with that. But most of my points are there. So let's get started. First of all, we're going to look a little bit at composition, and that is what your camera sees. It's how everything comes together in an image to tell a story, portray a feeling or mood. What do you want to show in this photo? What is the main subject or points of interest that I want the viewer to see? A quote that I read is, your viewers do not want to work to see a beautiful photograph, they just want to see it. So we're going to look at ways to try to make that photograph more interesting for your viewer to see. When you're looking at a picture, just to something, oh, there's a great picture, and throw up your camera and take a shot. Think of a few basic guidelines before you shoot that can keep your picture more interesting. First of all, good, it works. Focus on what is important. We already mentioned that briefly. But decide, what is the key element in this picture I want to take? And focus on what that is. Deciding on which ground you want to focus on will help determine on what your viewer focuses on. And obviously, I wanted to take a picture of the morning moon as it came down to set early morning. If you focus on the farthest object, then everything will be in focus. Your viewer will see the whole scene and not just one certain aspect of it. If you focus on an object right in front of your camera, it will blur the background and it's changing the depth and focus of your picture. If you focus tightly on a picture, those objects are going to seem larger than life, and you're obviously going to think there's some reason the photographer shot so close to those objects. She wants you to notice them, and they must tell a story. If you take a wide angle shot, those very same objects are now very small and seem insignificant, and you're not going to really notice that blue cup there like you notice the blue cup there. The whole story and the whole feel of the picture is going to change. Obviously, we focused on the softball, so there's a story behind that softball. There's a reason why we are focusing on there. And also on the baby's hands and feet and the mother's hands. There's a story, a mood that you're wanting to portray. So what is the depth of your photo? All scenery pictures have a foreground, a middle ground, and a background. Foreground being the grass, the deer is the middle ground, and this is my background. The foreground lies in the front, usually, of your subject. And typically, your middle ground is often your subject. It's what lies behind. Whoops, now what did I do? It lies behind the foreground, but not always. Sometimes the tulips here are the main subject, but that is also our foreground. And your background is anything behind your subject. Basket of Flowers is obviously the subject. There's my background. Usually in most pictures, you want all your grounds of a picture showing, but not always. It depends on the focus and the depth of the picture. So our natural urge is to get a clear, open shot of your image. You don't want anything to get between you and the subject that you're going to take. But if you want to add some interest and depth to your photo, don't be scared to include some foreground, which may just be some grasses and flowers. That can make a lot more powerful picture than cropping that off and just focusing on the mountains in the background. But if you include some foreground in your picture, you want to make sure it has some key elements to it. Something like flowers or rocks or trees or something near you that adds an interest to the photo. And by adding these elements, you can obviously give more depth. This one especially gives depth to your photo. But it only helps if it has something interesting to show. If it detracts from the eye and makes your frame feel junky, then you for sure want to keep the foreground out of your picture. Next point, check your backgrounds for unwanted detail. And I can't stress this one enough. And this usually applies more to portraits, but not always. But so often I get busy looking at my person I'm arranging, my family, and making sure everybody looks right, that I totally forget to check my background scenery. And then I get to see the picture and I think, oh, if I just would have moved them a little bit, it would have hit that junky car. Or all of a sudden I see there's a telephone pole back there that just ruined the picture. So if you learn to check your backgrounds first, it'll save you a lot of work later on in editing when you check. So obviously here, I keep doing the wrong thing here. Let's go back. The buildings in the background detracts from what I'm trying to show. And here it makes a lot cleaner picture. Or check your background for photobombers. And if sometimes just a tweaking of the angle of your photo will easily get rid of what you don't want. Shooting different directions in your background can change the feel of your photo. So all you need to do sometimes shooting a, like in this case, a butterfly, I just moved over a few steps, or you move a few steps this way. If you angle up or down, it can change your background and the whole feel and mood of a photo. There again, just a slight change in my camera and where I took and focused on the butterfly made all the difference in an ordinary picture to one that is a lot more interesting and makes the butterfly pop out at you. Another point to keep is keep your horizon straight. There again, this can be so easy to do. You're busy focusing on your object, and sometimes it can even be hard because you're not sure which line to line up with, especially if a window don't want to line up with the horizon. But use, if you can, use a window frame, a door frame, a tree, something stable. Sometimes cameras actually have little levels to know if you're shooting straight. There's nothing more frustrating to get a picture back and I like it, but it's crooked. You can straighten it when you edit, but then often you lose important background because as you straighten, it crops your photo. So get in the habit of checking your horizons and making sure you're straight before you take your picture. So you don't fill the frame, think simplicity. Oftentimes we want to get everything we can in this picture, but usually less is more. Don't be scared of white space in your photo. White space is usually a good thing. White space is also known as negative space, and it is the space surrounding your objects and your compositions. I'm trying to get the laser button and I hit the advance instead. Obviously your white space here and here gives room for your eye to travel through the picture and to relax. Usually simplicity is more pleasing to the eye than a full frame. We don't always have to capture the whole scene. You can zoom in to cut out the parts that's not important and only capture the parts that makes for a strong photo. What you cut out of a picture is sometimes more important than what you put in an image. So now we're going to look at the rule of thirds. I'm sure you all probably understand rule of thirds. We're going to talk about it very briefly. Obviously, it's a grid that looks like this. It often shows up in your camera viewfinder, or it can. There are four focal points where the lines intersect. And those four focal points has been what experts say makes a compelling picture when you place your subject in those focal points. I was wishing I could put the rule of thirds grid over my picture, but I wasn't smart enough to know how to do it. But try to visualize the grid going down and the lines going across. And obviously, my lighthouse is right where those focal points would be. And my horizon is down in the, towards the bottom of it. Learning this trick can make for a very compelling composition. It can feel make the picture more interesting than if you just put your subject dead center. And here again, my horizon, goes right through the middle. And here your boat is more in the rule of thirds and your horizon is as well. Rule of thirds can change the feeling and the dimensions of a photo. In this picture, I just see the whole moon. In this picture, my eye goes right there. And you also have some lovely white space there to give the feeling and mood to the photo. So use the rule of thirds as a guide. Though it's not has to be set in stone, dare to break it sometimes, but it is a nice way to help if you're not sure how to compose your picture to keep it in mind as an example. Next point we want to look at is, still got another picture here. Keep your camera close by. You never know when that perfect photo is going to appear around the next bend. You can develop the eye and always be viewing the world through your camera lens. And then you will see these pictures that you know right away it makes a great photo. I have a very patient husband. He says I wear out the brakes on the car because I'm always yelling, stop, back up, there's a perfect picture. Especially if you go on a trip in West Virginia. There is just pictures around the bend everywhere begging to be taken. I usually always kept a camera in the car because I learned so often when I wanted I didn't have it. Now when you have cell phones, I tend to grab my cell phone. When I was taking my children to school the other cold, frosty morning, there was lovely frost flakes on the window. And as I was going out our lane, the sun just came up right through. There, I did it again. Right, I loved how it shone. And I stopped and was taking pictures until my daughter's like, Mom, we're going to be late for school. You got to get going. So be prepared. You never know when the next picture will be around the bend. Now we're going to go beyond. That was some of your basic rules to keep in mind. Now we're going to try some other more advanced techniques, things that you can try to incorporate and to remember when you take your pictures. And I'm going to go through some of this briefly. I think probably in John's class, I think a lot of you are taking his. I hope I'm not tramping on his class too much. Hopefully he'll take more advanced into some of this. But leading lines guide the viewer's eye into the picture and leads the eye to where you want it to focus. So obviously here you can see the pathway goes back to the sailboat. I love how the lines in these buildings just draws your eye right up through the picture into the sky. Leading lines helps your eyes to navigate around a picture and helps to give the picture movement. It also is what can tie a picture together and make a pleasing composition. This is an okay picture, but when you got a crashing wave just coming right down into the seagull, it just adds a whole new dimension into your photo. There again, you got pathways that guide and lead the eye through. You can use leading lines, can be geometric, they can be symmetrical, triangular. There again, the line of the mill pointed back to the water wheel. Then you have the golden ratio. I'm sure some of you have probably heard that. It is a perfectly balanced ratio that is found in nature and has been thoroughly studied. And it is known to be very pleasing to the human eye. So in photography, it can be used to identify a main subject and can lead the eye through and around the picture. if you can picture the grid, we can sort of go around our bush and up and around and apply the golden ratio. Another leading line that you could use is an S shape. In this picture, obviously, the horses just get sort of lost. But I just moved over a little bit and I found a great perfect leading S-shaped line that just makes your eye travel right back to the photos. Makes a much more dynamic picture. We talked already a little bit about foreground. Foreground can be a great way to add leading lines to your image. I think the lines of the sunflowers connects with this line coming down and just travels right down to the farm in the distance. Leading lines can also be things like lines on the road, waves in the ocean, shadows on the snow. All of these you can use as leading lines to manipulate and guide a person's eye to where you want them to focus. But as in all things photography, be creative, and that's the key factors of helping you to have a fun, interesting scene. Okay, we're going to look briefly at keep shape and form. This is another way that you can make an interesting photo, because you're trying to capture a 3D image as you see it onto a 2D screen or your camera. So how can we keep that 3D feel? Sometimes you can get your picture back and you think, sort of a letdown. It was such an awesome image, but what you see just isn't quite what you saw with your eyes. So one way you can do that is to use fog. Fog surrounds the horse, blends the background, it adds depth to the photo. Same with a cow. Or you can also shoot, obviously this tree is your main subject, and the fog sort of fades the background, just giving a more 3D realistic feel to your photo. You can also shoot in snow. Snow is sort of like fog. It hangs on things. It gives layer and form to your images. Helps to make the background, the foreground more distinct, which also can add a 3D feel. Or if you want to try framing your picture, obviously, this gives attention to the main subject when you frame. It gives it lots of depth to a photo. Can remind you of when you look through those little, what were they called? You click the Viewmaster, thank you. And I always was so intrigued as a child. I just felt like I could reach out and just touch it and grab it. We're trying to do the same thing here when we add framing to our pictures. So things to use for framing, obviously trees, tree branches, but don't leave the space along the side. When you crop, keep it along the edge of your picture, you have a much more pleasing frame. Again, we're using tree branches to frame the photo and add depth and feeling to it. You can also use arches, tunnels, door frames, and windows to frame. By framing, we're drawing attention to the subject, and we're making a much stronger photo. Or you can try stepping behind the leaves and shooting through them, and you can frame a face that way, and it can make a very interesting photo. Or try unique out of the ideas. Obviously, we're framing the sunset in the truck window. Or here's one of my favorite pictures. My little son loved to hang out the car, back of the car when we're going in the lane. Also, you can add foreground again to help capture that 3D look and to give depth to your photo. Here it's the grasses, and here by adding the tree, it helps to give some more depth to your photo. Sometimes if you want to frame a photo, and especially if you're taking a portrait and there's nothing available, I've already tore off a tree branch and had somebody hold it up here while we took the picture, or you can move a few rocks where you want it. I also had a part of a picket fence that I would sometimes set along the side of a picture where there was no picket fence and I needed something to help frame it. So there's all kinds of tricks. You have no idea when you look at a photo what really is going on behind the scenes. So once you make a conscious effort to use framing in your photos, your eye will start to see ways that you can use all sort of elements. So get creative with your framing. All right, so let's go on here. Give your subject space to move. Obviously, the horse feels like it's going to run off the picture. So you need to keep the subject on the far side to give them room to move through the picture, and also so you don't feel like your eyes are going to run off the picture as well. That also applies to portraits. When you're taking pictures, give them some head space. Don't make them feel like they're bumping their head. This one makes you feel a lot more relaxed and like you can breathe. Look for details that others have never noticed. This is a great way to develop your style as a photographer. It's what your eye sees, maybe no one else ever noticed. So here we got a very normal first day of school picture. But we focused on the shoes. It adds a whole new different feel to your photo. You're telling a complete different story. There's nothing like those first brand new shoes on the first day of school. Every child has those memories. Or look for details in flowers, nature. Look for patterns. Does anybody want to take a guess what this is? We were at the ocean and the sand had these really unique dark spots, light spots. I don't know what made it, but I love the pattern and design that made on the sand. Here again, we're looking at the lily, close up the lily pad. We have some great leading lines going on, some interesting design. There was another cold, frosty morning, and the hoarfrost was so heavy on everything. I thought that made a great picture to get close up and to see the individual particles of the hoarfrost. These small details is what can make your photos very interesting and can make them pop out from the rest of the snapshots that you could take. Don't take, So remember the small details that makes your art different from everybody else's. Don't take cliche photos. So writing class, you often hear, don't write using cliches. Cliches have been overused, the reader has read them a million times, and they're just tired and worn out. Cliches aren't really better than sliced bread, and we don't want writers to reinvent the wheel, and we don't like when they put all their characters in a pickle or a jam. So, with that all said, we as photographers can sometimes do the same thing, and I am talking to myself, but especially beginners, we can just take the normal cliche photo that's a sunset. Once you've seen it once, you feel like you've seen it a million times. Or the picture of the rose bush, or the kitties in the basket, or a sunflower in the field, which I obviously took sunflower pictures. We've all taken them, and they can be great photos. There's nothing wrong with them. But they can be pictures after a while that you thought, oh, you just felt like you've seen them many times. So think of fresh ways to make an interesting photo a little bit different and not your normal photo. Surprise your viewers with something that they weren't really expecting. So maybe instead of a field of sunflowers, try one sunflower in front of a field of pumpkins. Or the seagull picture, frame your picture using the beach umbrella. That can add a new dimension to an old, worn out scene. Instead of a tree standing in the snow, try getting the shadow of the tree on the snow. It just adds a fresh new twist to your picture. So try taking vertical photos. Oftentimes, scenery pictures, obviously, mostly we use the horizontal, as this is a horizontal photo. The sun is sort of your focal point, but for a new twist, try going vertical. It changes your viewpoint, and now your viewpoint is more the sun on the water instead of the sun itself. A vertical shot can lend a complete different feeling to your picture, so play around with both views and decide which one works the best and which one you like the best. Obviously, for waterfalls, they usually work well for vertical. Or any pictures like a cliff, skyscraper, Washington Monument, those you'll usually lend themselves better to vertical than horizontal. But sometimes doing the opposite of the norm is what can make a very interesting photo and keep it from being cliche. So try to add a person or object to your photo to make it unique. This can create a dynamic image, and it gives a better visual and feel to the vastness of a photo. It gives the eye something to see, which is this little lady way down here, and compare how big this rock really is. You often see this done with a climber standing at the very edge of a cliff up there. But I didn't have a photo like that, but I did find this one. Now your eye has something to compare. You see my husband standing there, and it helps to give a visual with how vast and high we really were. It adds a whole new dimension to the picture. Now you just have to find someone willing to go out on the edge of the cliff and the limb to give you that perfect photo. Here's another great scene to help you realize how small the human is compared to the trees. Try to embrace sunlight. It's often something as photographers we often stay away from, especially for portraits. You can't have your subject squinting. But used correctly, sunlight is a great way to enhance your photos and make them very interesting. You can view your scene and what you're going to take and how sunlight interacts and where it gives shadows and light. Here, the morning hour, called golden hour, can add a whole total different feel to your picture and give a complete different mood than when you take during the midday sun. Complete different feel to your pictures. Soft light is usually cloudy, shady, or if you're in the shade, or early evening. If you have the time before you take your photo, maybe see how your morning light is, how your afternoon light, and how your evening light. That will maybe help you determine when you want to take your photo and what mood you want to give to your picture. Here again, you can use it to highlight your subject. This picture is just a little bit blah, but throw some sunlight on it and it can make it come to life. This is one of my favorite photos, and it's one of those where I just threw out my cell phone and captured the shot. But we all know the feeling of a little boy and his first fish and the delight on his face. And I loved how the sun just highlighted that spot right there. I normally wouldn't take a portrait with sun on, but the evening sun was low and it just was lovely highlighting the outdoor, making it glow, which I felt really added to the picture. So let's look at ways we can crop our photos. We're not talking about cropping your photos down to size to make it a 4x6 or to make it small to fit your photo album book. We're talking about ways to crop your photos to help give a good clear story of what you're wanting your photo to tell, or to draw the viewer's eye to the image that you're wanting to show, the aspect of your photo. Making the right decision of where and how to crop your photo can have a drastic impact on the visual. Cropping your photos can take a not so good picture that it's okay and can turn it into a wow, that was a really nice shot. I've had many times where I didn't think a picture was any good, but I played around and did some cropping and I was surprised how well it turned out. You can use cropping to eliminate the parts that you don't want, and that way it won't distract from the image that you want to show. This isn't the best example, but this right here, I thought, ruined the nice landscape of the picture. And by cropping it out, it also helped to center this, which again, we're going against the rule of thirds, but I felt like in this image, I liked the peak of the mountain to be very centered. cropping can change the mood and focus. Obviously here, we're looking more at the whole picture. Cropping it in close brings your eye and makes the water wheel be the main subject of your photo. You can crop to apply the rule of thirds to your photo. Let's see here. There we go, to bring it in. So we have a picture here that's just okay. But by doing some cropping, we're putting it now into the rule of thirds. And we're also making that come across. And there's our focal point. Same picture with a little cropping, we turned it into a nicer photo. When cropping, make sure you allow room for your people to breathe, especially in portraits. That's the original photo, so we wanted to crop in a little bit, but whoa, watch out, we're just way too close. When you crop, you now need to allow head space. Think of it as a wall around your photo, and think of your subjects right smack up against a wall. And too close, you feel anxious and you think, get me out of here, I'm claustrophobic. So yay, now we have some room to breathe. Okay, you also can crop at eye level to keep a photo where it should be. Again, try to apply rule of thirds if you can. We took this and his eyes are pretty much right in the rule of thirds line if we had the grid, which keeps him at eye level and keeps him where you feel like you can view them right in the eyes. The more you tighten your crop, it heightens the drama and draws your eye. So obviously we kept growing closer and closer, and your attention keeps changing with each crop that we do. Don't crop limbs at the joints. Don't make your subjects feel like they had amputation done. It can feel a little bit like when you see their ears are maybe cropped in half or across their knuckles on their fingers. It just makes it look awkward. So don't crop at the ankle. Let him have a foot to stand on. You're cropping right across the elbow and belly. Just feel like you're sort of cutting your subject in half. Give them, show a little more and give them a little more room. You can crop in different ways, but as general rule of thumb, you want to crop at the torso, mid-thigh, torso, like through the chest, through there, and through the middle of the leg. Not at the ankles, the wrists, elbows, and obviously the neck. But don't be scared to experiment. It's okay to crop off part of the head a little bit. Just be careful that you don't run it right through a little bit of his ear. Try different ways. In different ways, you crop is drastically going to change your image. So have fun with it. Zero in on what story and what mood you want to tell. All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to look at still life. This is a genre of photography used for the depiction of objects that are still, typically a group of objects, not just one object. You're creating an image rather than just capturing a moment. This type of photography is very powerful, and it's usually what you find in your professional paintings, posters, calendars, books. You can construct a photograph from the background to the subject to your lighting. You as a photographer have full control over aspect of your still life. And if it stays still, it can be still life, no matter what objects you're using. So it can be found anywhere. This is still life found at a roadside stand. There's a scene I did in my garden on a trip to Williamsburg. This isn't a true still life, but we put it together. Again, I have a very patient husband who was willing to be my subject here, and the dog actually behaved pretty good. is some nature still life scenes that you can see. But we're going to talk more on composing your own still life. The same composition rules still apply. Use a rule of thirds. Watch for too empty of a gap or too busy of a gap. You want to place your objects in a way that lead the eye into the picture and play around with the placements till you're happy in telling your story. This apron was my grandma's. Her middle name is Elizabeth, and my middle name's Elizabeth. So it's sort of special to have her apron as a namesake from her. So I wanted to use it in my photograph to tell the story. My grandma enjoyed her garden. She always had chickens and she gathered some eggs. So there are some things I put together to try to portray the feeling on my grandma's apron, which I named. And I also printed and used for Christmas gifts for my family one year. So group your objects in a way that complements each other and to tell your story. This picture is okay, but we only got two objects. Objects that are odd numbered instead of even numbered usually makes a much more pleasing picture to your eye. Your subject matters don't really matter what you use. Your traditional things for still life is often your vase of flowers sitting on a table, which there's nothing wrong with those. But you can group together interesting photos to make a pleasing composition. Here, a friend of mine was doing some pictures for a book she was doing, and every time I saw the picture over there, it just sort of bothered me. It just felt so alone. I was like, that picture could be a great picture. So I finally decided to speak up before the book went to print. And I said, oh, I would just love to see that picture arranged with a nice grouping. I think it'll be so much more interesting and so much more a delight to look at. So she took my suggestions and we got a great composition for her book that I think will enhance the story so much more. You can use anything for a background for your still life, but you do usually need a background. It can be big piece of fabric that you can drape, a piece of paper. You can use the wall. The picture of the lemons I had taken, I used the towel backdrop on my kitchen counter. Move your objects around to find the background that works best for you and to enhance the picture. As you obviously can see, changing from this background to this background just gives a whole complete different feel and look to your picture. Lighting is a big part of still life, and you don't have to have photography lights or professional lighting to get a nice still light. I often like just to use natural lighting coming from the window. I think that makes great lighting. Or you can also use a lamp if you wanted, or a lantern. I wanted a very dark feel, and by moving the lantern around, I was able to shine the light and show different aspects of the picture that I was taking. Sunlight is a great one to use. So if you're going to take outside, I had taken this picture in the evening and it was okay, but the next morning I decided to retake and I think we have a much more interesting picture that pops and comes to life. So sunlight can really enhance your picture. Play around with your angles. You can shoot low, you can get down and shoot up high, you can shoot straight on. There again, the different way you angle that you take can make a different feel of your picture. And usually when I'm taking, I take all different angles. I will end up with 60, 80 some shots just to get one nice photo that I like. That's a great part of using digital photography. You don't have to print 80 pictures out to choose the one that you want. So enjoy doing still life. I think it's a really fun way of photography. I really enjoy it. It does take time. Sometimes I can end up spending a whole morning and I think, oh, I got to get busy and get the wash done. So I finally have to put that camera away, but it can be so fun to see what for nice grouping of pictures you can get together. This was one evening, the sun was really coming through the window nice. I was making supper, just had happened to cut a big bouquet of flowers and set on my table. And I looked up and, oh, that's a picture. So supper just sort of stopped and waited and we took some pictures. I really was delighted. It ended up being one of my favorite photos. And yes, it is a vase of sunflowers, so we take very cliche photos too sometimes. So we have all these pictures. What are we going to do with them? You can post them on Facebook and Instagram, see how many likes you like, you get with them. Or you could put them on status, and there's nothing wrong with doing all that, that's fine. Or you could just leave them like I did, lay on my laptop. I think I'm up there, I don't know, 45, 50,000 pictures going. Never did anything with them. And I thought sometime I should do something with these pictures instead of just letting them lay there. So one of the very first things I started experimenting with was just turning them and making photo or cards with them. I use my laptop to add sayings, words to the pictures, and then had it printed out. Then you can cut cardstock if you want and put the photo on the front. You can actually purchase cards at Hobby Lobby or Michael's, different craft stores, if you want to use instead of creating your own card. Wheel. Let's see there. There we go. These are some other cards. Obviously, I turned my West Virginia picture into a card. I sold some cards at craft events. I've already set them up as consignment in the store. But they also, most of all, just make great gifts if you want to give to people. If you need a gift last minute for somebody, grab some of your cards that you made. Makes it very special. Some people will take the card and just frame it so it can serve two different purposes. I also printed the back of the card. I first just got a stamp made up at Staples that said, photo taken by my name. But now that looks a little bit chintzy. I've now started printing my own design on my laptop and printing it, the card on my printer to make it look a little more professional and try to pretend it is anyway. The next thing I started trying was making my own wall hangings. I always enjoy photos, pictures. So I also did some of the same thing. I would take the picture and add maybe a verse or a saying or something to it. And then I started experimenting with getting it printed on canvas. One thing you really have to keep in mind if you want to try printing on canvas is to remember that these canvases wrap around. So you got to allow room. You cannot, I did it again. You can't keep your wording here at the bottom. If that's how you send the picture in to be printed, these words are going to be what wraps underneath. Actually, right here I have it. So here we have the canvas. You can see the edges wrap around. So anything at the bottom is going to be wrapped around. So you have to keep that in mind when you are designing your canvas. I made the mistake of, the first times I did it, I forgot to include that extra space and my words were wrapping around. So I had to go back to the drawing board and totally redesign it. These are some other ones that I had got made. And bring just a few of them along to show. You can do all different sizes. You can do small, large. There again, keep in mind your sizes are going to crop. So if your picture starts out as a 4x6 and you blow it up to a size, it can really crop in on your picture. There were some pictures that I could not use because the picture was already taken really close up. And then when I went to blow it or get it done as say this size, it crop so much off the picture that I just couldn't do it. So watch your ratios. I learned that, let's see here. If you enlarge to an 11 by 14 size, it will usually crop an inch off your photo. An 8 by 10 size usually crops 2 inches off of a 4 by 6. But surprisingly, if you blow a 4 by 6 up to a 20 by 30, which is a really fun big size, that will not crop any off your photo. A 4x6 and 20 by 30 is the same ratio, so it will not crop. So definitely keep that in mind as you're trying to decide what size of canvas you want to get. Okay, You don't want to move? Anything coming on here? Okay. There's just some different ones that I did. A woodpecker. There was a Christmas scene and my sunflowers that I had got made. With my battery died. There we go. All right. There was a church one evening. It had snowed. We were driving around and we came across in a town close to us and they were having Christmas Eve services. And I just loved the scene. I was really delighted with the picture that I got. I also do frame print sometimes. Obviously, to just do a print versus a canvas is a lot cheaper initially. It's just printed on regular photo paper, so it's very flimsy. So obviously you have to frame your picture, which I thought would be cheaper than a canvas, but I realized in the long run it really isn't, because till you buy your frame, you can really get a lot of expense in frames. Also, I was going to mention with canvases, I got excited. I thought, I'm going to make a lot of my own wall hangings. We're going to save money because it's my own pictures. Well, I found out canvases aren't real cheap to print, and you can spend a lot of money in your canvases. I'm trying to think the size. I think this size here probably cost me at least $80 probably to print. So you really, in a sense, are not going to save money, but you're just going to have fun because it's your own photo. So it's going to be really special to you. Watch for sales and try different places. I found sometimes Shutterfly and could have really good deals where they have 40, 50% off their canvases. And that would make maybe that more like $50 instead of $80. I was really excited. I was printing a whole bunch of canvases off for a craft sale I was going to do. And Snapfish had a really good deal. They were only $20 for 16 by 20. Wow, this is the place to print canvases. Well, I got to the checkout and I saw where they got their money. When it came to the shipping, it was like $25, $30, $40 for the shipping. So when I added my two prices together, they were not any cheaper than anybody else. You may try a local camera place, all around different people print canvases. So check around, see who has the best price, maybe who has a promotion going. Can be a great way to get cheaper canvases. For frames, I often go to Hobby Lobby again. They are usually every other week have them 40% off. AC Moore, Michaels, you can usually get frames pretty cheap. Or keep an eye out even at yard sales. Sometimes I picked up a frame at a yard sale for $2 and tore out the picture and put my own picture into it. Or the best deal you can get is maybe if you have a really handy husband like I do. He enjoys woodworking, and so he's already made me some frames. I was trying some animations on my pictures and it obviously doesn't work. Okay, here's just some other framed pictures that I had. So my husband wanted me to make him some prints for him to put at his shop. So he made one big basic frame above his desk. Let's see if this works. There we go. And he wanted me to make seasonal pictures. He just swaps out the picture, but keeps reusing the same frame. You can try craft shows with your pictures, but if nobody buys, it don't work. But it's fun to keep trying. You can try magazine covers. You may recognize this photo earlier. I submitted to Written on My Heart, and they printed, and Keepers at Home did the cliche sunflower again. But not all magazines will accept pictures, but it is a fun way to freelance your photos and to maybe see who would take what. Some Keepers at Home will pay you for your picture. Written on My Heart do not, but it's fun to at least just see it in print. These are photos I had taken for Daughters of Promise. So study your magazine style before you submit to them. Make sure it fits their guidelines. Usually for a front cover of a magazine, you have to have a vertical photo. You also don't want your photo too busy. They need room at the top to put their logos and their designs. You can try a photo contest. I did a few. I'd love to do more, but it takes time and I'm too busy to really worry about it. our local camera store did photo contests. This one won first place. This one won second. And there was many I submitted that never won anything. So embrace failure. To fail is the norm. If you don't try, you'll never know. You won't know if your picture could win a prize at a photo contest until you try. If we didn't have a goal to strive for, there would be nothing that we could keep working towards. Now, all of the pictures we take, remember, only 10%, if even that, will be perfect pictures that maybe you could consider prize winning and do something with. And I realize I did jump ahead of myself here just a little bit. A few more things I have did with my pictures. We're going to back up just a little. You can get your photo printed on a pillow. I did for my daughter 1 year for Christmas, and it's well used, so excuse the fuzzies. I framed grandma's picture and gave to my mom and sisters for a Christmas gift 1 year. Our local camera shop prints little notebooks, and so I used different of my pictures and personalized and had little notebooks made for my family. You can print on t-shirts. So I did one for my son's first book that he got for his birthday, which he was delighted with. There's lots of things that you can print on. Mouse pads, puzzles, keychains, magnets, you name it. You can usually print on anything nowadays. This is another form called foam blocks. I know some companies do that you can print on, and you can just set it on a tabletop. It's very light. It don't weigh much at all. It's just a fun, different way to... show your pictures. And then I also did bring along some of the cards that I had made. If anybody would like to look through it afterwards, you're more than welcome to. And they can be for sale if you feel like buying one. You can try selling your photos to a website. I never have. I would love to look into it sometime, but right now I'm just too busy to worry about it. I know there's different websites that will buy your photos, or maybe it's on a consignment. Anybody who purchases it, you get so much of the price. I know Shutterstock and iStockPhoto are two different sites that will buy your pictures, or you can consign them. I don't know too much more than that. Is there anybody here who knows more about it or had experience with it that could tell us? Feel free to speak up. Okay, someone's waving their hand.
Well, I've never sold pictures through that, but I buy lots of pictures off of it.
Okay.
Dreamstime.com is the one that I go to first.
What is it again?
Dreamstime.
Dream.
Like you dream at night with an S on it.
Okay.
Time.com. Mm-hmm. That's just another one to check.
Thank you. Dreamtime.com.
Dreams.
Dreams. Sorry. Okay. Dreamstime.com. All right, yeah, check them out. It might be a great way where you could put your photos and make some money on them. Okay, so back to our conclusion. Embrace failure. And get out there and practice. You're not going to learn if you don't shoot. So keep that camera close by. Feel free to be ready to stop and back up. Don't feel embarrassed. Sometimes I think my children are like cringing when mom gets out and she's there shooting this picture. But you're not going to get a perfect photo unless you're willing to get it out there and to take. And then when you get your picture, you see it, you'll thrill in that awe moment when you see that everything has come together, a very pleasing composition, and that it has made a really nice snapshot and it has taken it beyond the everyday. And then one closing thought. You just have to live, and life will give you pictures. Mm-hmm. So I guess we have a few minutes here. Was there any questions or comments or anything anybody would like to add?
You can improve your style by looking on those Photoshops and seeing the like flicker and
okay.
Seeing what other people do.
Sure, yes.
And then figuring out what they did and do that. I mean, I got a couple prize winners after I had looked at something
okay.
And then went and I saw a family up against a brick wall and took a Raggedy Ann doll and put her on a wood stool, and it was mainly texture, black and white.
Okay.
And it was a good money maker.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, definitely you can learn from the experts. You can study other photos and how they did. The very professionals. It's a great way to learn. Anybody else? Yes.
What is Walmart quality like for canvases and stuff?
I have never tried Walmart, so I cannot tell you. Is anybody else?
Like,
no.
Where do you go for your, like, do you go to your local town?
I have went a lot of different places. I have went to our local camera store already. I do a lot online. I just try in different sites, websites that are printing sites, till you find one that you really like. I've never tried Walmart's or CVS though, but yeah, give them a try. Okay, well, thanks so much for coming. Enjoyed having y'all, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And definitely take John's class tomorrow if you possibly can. Hopefully, he can get you more on the technical side of photography.